Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association, coming to you today from Los Angeles. Joining me today is Ronnie Feldman. Most of you know him probably from his time at the Second City. He's talking to us now as the founder of Learnings and Entertainment. And today we're going to be talking about compliance training, communication strategies, and all that goes with it. Ronnie, first of all, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, good to be here.
So let's start with a topic that is one that's still a bit controversial when it comes to compliance, which is the use of humor in compliance communications. There's some people that are still very nervous about using it. You're obviously not. And why do you think humor can be something that's very useful for compliance programs?
It's such a fascinating subject for me. Partially because it's the thing that draws people in and they're like, oh, this is interesting. And it's also the thing that scares them from using it. But it's fascinating because there are examples everywhere we look of entertainment being used in service of a message. And we see it in our everyday lives. People, watch videos online. They watch The Daily Show or Seth Meyers or other things like that, other shows like that, to actually get information in a way that's accessible and easy to understand. Airline safety videos is another great example of a very serious subject that now is being used. Entertainment techniques are being used to get people to pay attention and remember it. And the base of it, I think the fear comes from the fact that people assume comedy means to make fun of. They think of Don Rickles or a more modern reference. But humor can be used in service of a message. And I would even argue it's not even about comedy. It's about being interesting. It's about using entertainment conventions as a delivery mechanism, if you will, where you're not undercutting their message. You're saying it's so important, I need people to pay attention to remember.
Yeah, and I think your airline videos is a great example of that. In fact, I wrote something for the blog about it, and that it's been a bit of a revolution. I mean, here you have a very deadly serious topic, quite, literally. And what the airlines have done is learned that they can actually get people to pay more attention if they do something interesting. In fact, several of them have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of viewings on YouTube. I mean, you never would think that people would say, oh, gee, I think I'll go watch an airline safety video, but they are. And another question that comes up a lot is the question of training length. How long should your communications education of your workforce be? For a long time, it was sort of the hour-long module was really the sine qua non for this. Now, there's a movement towards shorter vignette-type training. Why do you think that works for people?
Well, I'm a big proponent of shorter, more frequent training and communications than longer methods, and that's just from being a human. As we've all evolved, we're busy. We have short attention spans. There's lots of research out there about the working memory, how much time we have to put towards something. I actually want to make a distinction here because I think that when you think of education as a broader umbrella, there's training where you're trying to teach people things, and then there's communication where you're trying to stay top of mind and to remind and reinforce. And I think there's a lot of social science that backs the idea that there's much more of a need to communicate more frequently than to train. They're both equally important, but I tend to think in the GRC space, we're focusing all our efforts on training and the learning theory to make sure people understand the teachable moment and to get learning transfer and all that. And I don't undercut that at all. What I would say is what the big gap is people forget stuff and they need to be reminded. And it's most important that they need to know how to recognize an issue, where to go for more information, and then it's okay to go there. Yeah, and I think that's a message, pardon me, that's a message that I think should be ubiquitous. The more often that you can get that message out, the better.
Yeah, and I think Dan Ariely, who's famous for his research into people's willingness to cheat, would agree with you. I mean, he's found that moral reminders are very, very effective, but only for a very short amount of time. And it certainly argues for a greater frequency of reminders rather than long stuff. Do you think it depends, though, on the topic? I mean, are there certain topics that you really can't deal with on something short, or do you think pretty much every topic out there could benefit from this sort of shorter reminder initiatives?
Well, here's the way I look at it. It depends what you're trying to accomplish. So again, not to minimize the importance of training, I'm just making the point here that knowledge and understanding doesn't always lead to good behavior, and that's because environment influences behavior. There's lots of studies. The Solomon Ash study is what I usually refer to. You know, it talks about conformity and groupthink. So with that as a backdrop, I think the idea is, if you're trying to create a speak-up culture, the things that you need to remind people of frequently and often are how to recognize an issue, where to go for more information, and that it's okay to go there. And you can do that very, very quickly. That then makes the training that you did on anti-corruption or whatever the weighty, serious topic is, harassment and discrimination, that makes that training more effective because they forgot about it already. So to me, it goes hand in hand. You need to have knowledge transfer, and then you got to find lots of ways to say, hey, it's okay to talk to me about this. It's okay to talk to me about this.
Okay, yeah. And it's, since it does come up for people all year round, not just the week after they got the training,
that's
it's
right.
Really an argument for reminding them. So we spend a lot of time with training that tends to be web-based, but live training is making a little bit of a comeback. I mean, I hear more questions about it. The DOJ has said that in areas like the FCPA, they expect there to be some for the high-risk employees. When do you think a live training session is a better choice?
Well, I may not be the best expert to speak on that, coming from our entertainment background, but I believe that it's, what are we trying to do here? It's about engaging employees, and it's much more easy to do that live and in person. The reason the companies don't do that is purely for bandwidth. All the companies I talk to, it takes a lot of time and effort to have the right kind of people to take people out of their jobs to have a live training. So, personally, I'm of the opinion, from talking to all my clients, the more that you can do that, the better. You just have to be willing to put the time and investment into doing that live training, with the caveat that you're spending the time to make it interesting, engaging, and interactive. I could make a great argument for sort of the on-demand, do-it-your-own-pace, let's treat you like adults kind of training. But I know several companies that they've gone away from the rote, check the box, I've read the code, and I'm signing and certifying, and they're doing more stuff that involve live interactions, speaking engagements, lots of more manager-led stuff. So it's your messages being embedded within the business, not coming from compliance, but coming from managers. And they're putting in the time to kind of arm their leadership so that they can carry the message forward. So I personally believe that the more that you can do that, the better. So then it's not coming from this scary outside body. It's coming from the business itself.
And you raise a lot of good points there. I mean, for one, if you're going to do live training, the real benefit is being face to face with people, and you want the interactivity so that people can ask questions and are forced to not only just sit there, but to be a part of the program, to think, to talk with each other, to talk with the instructor, and also, to your other point about having manager-led stuff especially, it's a good way to make sure that everyone's bought in, that it's not just something coming from the compliance department. It's something that's a part of what a manager does, which is just try and ensure that the company moves forward in the right way. Well, this has been some really great insight. I really appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today. Any words of advice, final, last bits before we sign off for people who are thinking about how do I make my training and communications more effective for my compliance program?
Yeah, I guess I would say this. To me, there's lots of great technology out there. The training that I've seen from lots of different vendors has gotten better and better and better. But I think the number one issue that a program should think about is accessibility. How to rebrand my program so that people know that I'm not so scary, that I'm available, and I let employees know that as often as possible. Because to me, the biggest disconnect for that I see in this space is that almost every ethics compliance professional I meet says, I'm there. They view themselves as advisors and coaches who are trying their best to help the company succeed within the rules. And then you talk to the vast amount of employees and they think, I don't know that I'm scared of these people, I'm apathetic to these people, or I don't like them. And so that is the disconnect that I think needs to be solved first, which is it doesn't matter how well you train people, if they don't trust and support, if they don't trust you and trust the program, culture will kill you on that. So anyway, this is a long-winded way of saying I think the first thing you need to address is what your policies look like, what your trainings look like, what your communications look like, how you talk to people so that you are more welcoming and approachable. And I think that's a far better way to mitigate risk than worrying about how great your training is, quite frankly. It's rebranding.
Good counsel. Well, Ronnie, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association, thanking all of you for listening in and wishing you a very good day.
Thanks, everybody.